Yeah, thank you very much, members who are starting with the meeting. Just as a matter of housekeeping. Just as a matter of housekeeping, Honorable Muela, can we mute our mics? Can we mute our mics? And put our cell phones into silence, just as a matter of housekeeping. The meeting is starting. The agenda of this meeting today is as follows. Please, it was distributed quite before time, the agenda. But on the time allocation, just disregard the issue of time allocation decide, because we may not be going according to those times allocated. This meeting has been allocated 3 hours to finalize this business. But I'm sure it is always commendable that we finalize the business 10 minutes before, so that our conclusions are proper and orderly. Item number one is opening and remarks, as you see it. Number two is apologies. Number three is a briefing by the Legal Services of Parliament on into the allegation of corruption against acting Chief Executive Office of Government Printing Works. And it will be a presentation from Legal Services, then a presentation from the Minister. Then item number four, which will be, we'll then discuss, comment, and get answers for that item. After that, we'll go to item five, which is a briefing by the department on the EOH stroke ABIS and visa facilitation services contracts. After that, we'll take discussions. Then item number seven will be closure. And that is the agenda of this meeting. Can I note a hand that would want to talk to the agenda? It will appear we are all agreeing that the agenda for today is as circulated and is as per the program of the Committee of Home Affairs in Parliament. We are again a members' meeting with a development that we are now in level three of what we called the lockdown. And level three has a lot of things that people are able to do, including, among others, training on the street, which some of us have started, and a lot of other things that you see. I should say that I need to commend once more the Command Council, as led by the President of the Republic, Honorable Cyril Ramaphosa, His Excellency, for the sterling guidance that has been provided to the citizens of this country since the COVID started up until now. We're at level three. We are indeed heading to level one. We have agreed and accepted what the President has said, and we have seen that it was indeed true that if we did not take the decision of locking down at the time we have taken it, the country would be in catastrophe. And when we commend the Command Council, we indeed need to commend also the Minister of Home Affairs, whom within this lockdown, since it has started, we have seen him up and down, trying to find solutions around issues of home affairs and around issues of health and all other issues that are being discussed at the Command Council. We've seen that visibility, Minister, and as the Committee of Parliament, we remain inspired about the work that we have put. It is that work that you do, Minister, that makes us to be able to do oversight, because if we were absent at work, we will not be able to do oversight, because you must do oversight of the work that you do. If you don't do the work, committee will have also less work to do. So we see the committee being busy, informed by the fact that the minister is busy doing the work that we need to oversight. So, colleagues and members, we are meeting again today. We are joined by the Deputy Minister, Honorable Nzunza. Last time we reported that he had an OD that he had managed to deal with. And once more, we would like to welcome you, Honorable Deputy Minister. And whatever has happened, the committee has expressed a view that the law must take its course and the law must do what it's supposed to do. So the community has full confidence in the justice system of this country. And as for you, we thank God that we protected you from the ordeal that you have, and encourage you that when we have time, you must also pray at your own corner and thank God that you survived the ordeal. We are welcoming you with those words, Minister and Deputy Minister, and also welcome DG McKay, and welcome all of you members who are almost heading towards a one-year cycle of being together as members. And I, for one, should say that it has been an interesting engagement to have been paired with all of you. The manner in which you oversight, the manner in which you engage on the reports, and the respect that you continue to show to the chairperson and continue to show to our visitors, the department and other stakeholders, and asking questions without fear, favor, or prejudice. And that, I think, has assisted the committee. Because with your guidance and participation, from when we started until now, I can say also without fear of favor and fear of contradiction, that I see the department taking a proper shape in terms of repositioning itself as it has said it wants to be a security department, and government has accepted the department as such. With the contribution of all of you members, I've seen that I see the department and its repositioning taking leaps and bounds. And without you, the department will not be able to self-correct and to look at itself in the mirror and do things that are indeed in the interest of the people. Since we have met, I think the department has lived up to its expectation in terms of providing reports and ensuring that they account. And I wish to say this, that with those questions that you request that you send answers later, please adhere with the time space of doing so, because to avoid members ending up writing directly to you. And I'm requesting members, when questions are not answered, please let the central point know that we have not had questions that have not been answered, so that we can take collective responsibility of whatever is happening in the committee. And with those words, I welcome all of you members. I'm hoping that we engage fruitfully as we always do. Can I take apologies, Eddie?
Good afternoon. I've got only one apology of that of Miss Kanyile. She said she was going to go to a doctor.
Okay. Thank you very much. One apology. It is that of a doctor. I'm sure members will accept the apology. Safe to say that we discussed this matter. The item on the agenda is an item that Honorable Kanyile, for the past two meetings, she has been conversing that it does. So I'm a bit unhappy that she had forced that this item be here and is here today and she's not here. But it is, we're also told it's on an account of medical related issues. For record purposes, we will discuss and dispense of this item, and maybe she will get the minutes of what we had resolved on. And can we go to item number three? Is the item number three, we'll start by the Advocate Jensen to just give us his presentation. From there, the minister will take over from there. From there, I'll then allow members. Advocate, can you take us through?
Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable McClover.
May I ask, Chair, I'm not too sure the people in the meeting. I see Alina Fossey, who is also in the meeting, and we are going to discuss the issue. I'm not too sure whether it's the same Fossey. If it's the same Fossey, is she allowed to be in this?
She's not allowed to be in this meeting.
I see some.
Eddie, can you clarify that?
Yes, she's leaving.
Eddie, can you clarify that? Eddie, can you move? Can you mute?
I'm sorry. No, I was just checking the names, but I couldn't see her. I didn't see her because
she just left.
Oh, okay.
She just left.
Why did you give the invitation, Eddie?
No, I didn't give the invitation. I didn't give the invitation, so that's why I say no. I didn't see her that she was in the meeting.
Okay, well, it's a matter of housekeeping. We'll also deal with it maybe outside this meeting because this meeting is time bound. Can we allow the advocate to present?
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, members, honorable members, and colleagues. For those who do not know me, I'm Frank Jenkins, Senior Legal Advisor at Parliament. I'm here today with my colleague, Siloshini Gangan, who together we dispose of the opinion for the committee. So, Chair, the way I want to just do this presentation is just in broad terms explain to the committee our basis for our advice that was presented to the committee, and that is that the issue of the complaint that the whistleblower has brought forward, when one reads through that document, one sees that he has gone to the Public Service Commission, he has gone to the minister, and in his own words, out of his frustration, he's come now to the committee itself. What one needs to know is that the committee, of course, can do only what is allowed in terms of the rules and the constitution and law to do with this information that has been given to the committee. So that's why we've taken the approach of how should they process this submission that we received from the whistleblower. Now, Chair, I've seen now in the meantime, and I've read the interim report of the Public Service Commission. My colleague will speak a little bit about that. There were certain findings made there and certain recommendations made to the minister, to the executive authority of the government printing works. My colleague will also just explain that, of course, the whistleblower's complaints go a little bit further than what the scope of the investigation of the Public Service Commission was. And then our advice is specifically on those. How can the committee take those forward? But from where we were sitting, Chair, the process itself, as I say, there's recommendations made, but for what the committee can do with it, it's fundamentally an oversight function to see exactly is the minister taking the recommendations on board of the Public Service Commission, how is the minister responding to that, what is happening with the government printing works, because that is a component of the Department of Home Affairs. How can the committee maintain oversight over that body without actually getting involved with day-to-day decision-making? That's the point I want to start with. Committee can't go. We don't like to say to a committee, you can't do it, but the fact of the matter is the committee is not managing the government printing works. The committee is not doing the appointment within government printing works. The committee has oversight over the minister and government printing works as a whole. So from that angle, we've now advised how the committee can deal with this matter. So if my colleague would want to come online and just explain or take the committee through the opinion itself, and then we can deal with questions, Chairperson. I'm going to mute myself and kill my camera, but if you ask me questions, I'll come online again, Chair, if that is okay with you, Chair.
Okay. Proceed, colleague.
Good afternoon, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Honourable Members. So the opinion that we were requested to provide primarily dealt with the allegations that were levelled against the acting CEO of GPW, Government Printing Works. The allegations went very wide, much wider than what the PSC's report dealt with. They only dealt with one of the allegations. And so in the opinion, what we've suggested is that we've set out the regulatory framework that deals with fiduciary duties and responsibilities of people entrusted with financial management. And we've just touched on powers of the committee. And essentially what we've said in the opinion is that the host of allegations against the acting CEO could be referred to the Public Service Commission for investigation. That's the crux of what our opinion is saying, essentially.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable Minister.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I think I need to clarify a lot of things, because even when the legal advisors of Parliament gave their presentation just a few minutes ago, I realized that there is confusion about the issues we are dealing with here. Maybe the confusion is what happened first and when. Maybe I need to start there. On the 4th of February, I received a letter from the General Manager of Human Resources at the Government Printing Works, to which letter was attached a document that was supposed to be a sort of sworn statement, whereby a worker of Government Printing Works who left on the 31st of January, this letter I'm receiving on the 4th of February, the person left the employment on the 31st of January. And on leaving, he submitted a document that alleges that the acting CEO of Government Printing Works instructed him to do corruption in the appointment of a facilitator for the Government Printing Works when they will be holding their strategic management meeting. They wanted a facilitator who will facilitate that development to draw the APPs which they come to present to Parliament. So they wanted that to be in the form of a workshop, which wanted the facilitator. He said no. There were three people, because, I mean, there were three quotations, one of which pulled out and they were left with two. One cost 51,000 rand. The other was costing 54,000 rand. And the allegation is that the CFO insisted that he takes the one for 84,000 rand, meaning the difference of 30,000. and that's the allegation. Then the allegation went further to say, no, this information that he was instructed to do corruption is contained in a recording, in an audio recording, because he said after receiving the information, he phoned the acting CEO, the acting chief executive, and without her knowledge, taped her and put it in an audio and said that is the evidence he has got. So after I received this thing, this letter on the 4th, on the 13th of February, I then received another letter from the Public Service Association, the union now, is a majority union at Government Printing Works, where they were submitting the same letter and they said, this man who has left and who has submitted this complaint that he was caused to do corruption is our member. And Minister, we want you to suspend the chief executive and investigate this allegation. I then asked the head of HR that please prepare a memo for me, which I must send to the Public Service Commission because of the seniority of this CEO, is the most senior person. You need an outside body to investigate. I then wrote a letter to the Public Service Commission on the 17th of March. I presented to them these two documents, which are similar, by the way, one sent by the HR manager and the other sent by the union, but all from the same individual. I sent them to the Public Service Commission and said, please investigate these allegations of corruption, right? So that is one allegation which you did not know about. I did not send it to you. It had nothing to do with Parliament, but I sent to the Public Service Commission. Then, while the Public Service Commission was investigating this allegation, on the 15th of April, my PA received an email from a gentleman called Sikokele Mike Ngwambi, who had put several allegations on that email. The first allegation was that, by the way, that email was to me, was that, Minister, you know of an allegation of corruption against the acting CEO, and you did nothing about it. Remember, by that time, I had already sent it to the Public Service Commission on the 17th of March. This letter I'm receiving on the 15th of April, almost a month after I've sent this into the Public Service Commission. The allegation is that you are not doing anything. You are protecting the CEO. The second allegation was that we are aware that you are intending to appoint this acting CEO on a permanent position on the advertised post, regardless of this allegation of corruption. We are also aware that she is being lobbied for. Sorry, that minister, you are being lobbied to appoint her. You are being lobbied by senior ANC members. You are lobbied by MECs from Gauteng. You are lobbied by some director generals. And the biggest lobbyist minister is your best friend, the acting director general of COCTA. And then we are also aware, Minister, that you have got business deals with this lady. You have promised business deals with each other. That's why we are going to appoint her. And Minister, if you appoint her, I will send a letter to Parliament, to the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. I will send a letter to the President of the country. I will send a letter to the Minister of Public Service and Administration. I will send a letter to the media. And lastly, I'll go to court. Those were the allegations in that letter, and that letter was received by all of you as members of Parliament. I wanted to do a follow-up with this person, that if I must again investigate this allegation, firstly against Ms. Fosi, but then also against myself, because I'm supposed to be making business deals with her, I needed more information, especially about these senior ANC leaders and MECs and director generals who are lobbying me. We then sent an email to this person because we wanted to ask those questions. But before that, we asked the government printing works to check among the staff members to give us the name of this individual so that we can engage with him. And the report came that there's no such an individual here. We don't know this type of person in the government printing works. We've never had this type of person working here. So for government printing works. But then he sent another email to my PA saying, I'm aware that you sent a letter to my lawyers. And I did, Chairperson, this information on my own self, not as a minister, now as an individual, because I'm being accused here for doing corruption. And I wanted to send a legal letter to say, please bring all this information which you said you have. Don't have to wait for me to do anything if you know about corruption. Why don't you write these letters? Why don't you go to court or to the media? Then I said, no, I'm going to court before you because I want you to bring this information. He then responded to my PA and said, I'm aware that you are sending me to lawyers, but blah, blah, blah. In other words, just that I'm aware that you are sending all these emails, but you are not going to get me. I then decided, Chairperson, that is high time that I bring in state security to find out who this individual is. You can't find a person who's making such strong allegations and sending letters around, and yet we don't know. If he's a whistleblower in hiding, well and fine, then he must go to the investigative agencies and tell them. The state security responded to me that they've investigated. They are at the level where they need an a warrant, and they can't get a warrant. The warrant can only be gotten if you go to police. I then went to report the matter to police. The police gave it over to the Hawks, and the Hawks asked me to write an affidavit about these issues. And I wrote that affidavit and asked the Hawks to investigate. Number one, the ANC members who are said to be lobbying me to appoint Ms. Fossi, the Gauteng MECs who are doing the same, the directors general who are doing the same, this gentleman who is a friend of mine, who is an acting DG of POCTA. And I came to discover that this gentleman who is supposed to be a friend of mine is actually the husband to this lady. And he's supposed to be a friend of mine. I've never met him. I don't know him. Even up to today, as I'm sitting here, I don't know the gentleman who was the acting DG of COCTA, who is a husband to this lady. So I said, the Hawks must investigate all those things. Further, the Hawks must investigate the fact that it is said that I'm intending to appoint this lady, regardless of the fact that she's not qualified to do the work. I wanted them to investigate because, Chair, as far as I know, this lady has got a master's degree and two postgraduate diplomas. And in terms of the qualification to work as a CEO of Government Printing Works, they want an RQV 8, and she has got three of them. And it says you must have been in the public service for 8 to 10 years, five of which you must have been at senior management. And this acting CEO has been in the public service for 26 years, 16 of which has been in the senior management position. So I wanted to investigate whether all those are lies, because that's the information we've got at our disposal. Then, while the Hawks were doing that, another letter was written to the Minister of Public Service and Administration, Minister Senzo Mthulu, who phoned me with that letter and allegation, which was stating all these things and adding that the acting CEO also influenced me to approve a trip to Paris for a conference on security printing. And the people who went on those trips are friends, and they travel first class at the expense of the state. I said the Hawks must also investigate this because I was having a file on me and the tickets, and I know that three people undertook that trip and it was approved by me. So if the three people were supposed to be friends, I wanted that to be investigated. So that one, the Hawks is still investigating. Meanwhile, while all this was happening, I was then written by the acting CEO again, that at the time the post of CEO was advertised, we also advertised the post of CFO and the post of operations manager. I was then informed that those applications which people have sent in have been stolen. So I went to the Hawks again and told them that I think these are related things. They must also investigate the disappearance of all those files. In the meantime, the Public Service Commission completed their investigation, which they presented to me yesterday. And it's a quite a lengthy presentation. I immediately this morning, because I received it last night, I sent the copy to the chairperson of the portfolio committee. I'm sure he'll give you that copy. But I just want to summarize what is written there. On page 5 of this report, or maybe let me, before coming there, just to give you the salient issues. The Public Service Commission wrote to me when they were investigating to send them several documents. And I asked Mr. Holambi, which I think is here, he was the acting CFO at Public Printing Works at that time. I asked him to send them those documents. They were looking for all the policies of procurement. They were looking for the meetings of the supply chain management. They were looking for the attendance register. They were looking for all that information, and Mr. Holambi sent them. Now, in their report, they interviewed several people at Government Printing Works, including the gentleman who wrote this letter, who has since left Government Printing Works. They interviewed him and asked for him to present this audio, because his main evidence, as he said in the letter he wrote to me, is that I taped this person instructing me to do corruption. So they were asking for that audio to listen to it. The gentleman then told them that no, his phone fell into water. He does not have it. But then he said he has got two people who will vouch for him that such a recording happened, because they were listening to him, because he said, when I was recording the CEO, I put it on the speaker and called these two people who are colleagues to come and listen. The first one was called in, who confirmed that, yes, he had that recording. The second one said, yes, he had it, but he forgot what was said. And so that's the information about the recording, which is in the report. But on page 5 of the report, I'm reading it, paragraph 7.2.2, you can mark it so that when you get this report, you'll read it. I'm reading it verbatim. It says, the Public Service Commission investigated the regularity of the process followed in the procurement of service provider to facilitate a strategic planning session of the Government Printing Works that was held during the period of 15 to 16 October 2019. In accordance with the terms of reference for the investigation, during the investigation, there was no evidence presented to the Public Service Commission suggesting that there was corruption on the part of Ms. Alina Fossey. Otherwise, the Public Service Commission will have reflected it as such in this report and referred it to a relevant, competent body for further attention. So they are saying they never sent anything to any competent body for further attention, because there was no evidence of corruption. Remember, they were not aware that on my side, I've already sent documents to the Hawks, because the Public Service Commission did not receive the report which you as members of Parliament received. The only letter they received, they did not receive the letter of allegations which you as members of parliament received. The only document the Public Service Commission received was this letter from this gentleman who said, I was instructed by phone to do corruption and I've taped it. So they say there's no evidence of corruption. Then they go on the findings, which is page 12 of the report, on paragraph 9.2, yes, which is on page 13 of the report, on the findings. They say no, they wrote several findings there, which I don't have to repeat, about some of the processes which they believe there were some irregularities in the process. But paragraph 9.2 said no finding is made on the allegations of corruption by Ms. T.A. Fossey. And then it comes to recommendations. The recommendations is about taking corrective action on the issues of compliance on supply chain management processes at the printing work by the acting CEO and by the then acting chief executive officer, and that GPWO must ensure that adequate planning is provided, and that GPWO must ensure that supply chain unit provides technical advice, and that Public Service Commission has noted that the GPWO has indicated that the supply chain policy and the asset management policy, which were not approved at the time of the commencement of the investigation, have since been approved as reflected in the acting CEO's comments, and that the government printing works must urgently ensure that the financial delegation to GPW are reviewed, et cetera, et cetera. This is the end of the report, Chairperson. Now, today, this morning, the Hawks were with me to finalize this affidavit I must send, in which I'm asking them to investigate all the other allegations of the letter that we have received. So this report from the Public Service Commission is a final one. It's not an interim report. It's final. And it was investigating only one issue, the allegation that the CFO instructed somebody through a telephone which was recorded to do corruption. That one is finalized by the Public Service Commission. The others on the letter you have received, I'm waiting for the Hawks, and they are busy with it, including the theft of those documents, because I believe this is more or less a similar process by the same people, which is exactly what I told the Hawks. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Requested AG to release the report to members this morning. I hope every member has received both the report from the legal services and the report from the Public Service Commission. Can I take hands that are going to interact with the report? Please, we want to step off the item. Let us, if we ask questions, make suggestions so that we're able to close the item nicely. I'm going to take Honorable Mwela, Honorable Lizel, Honorable Lekhwase, Honorable Makluva, and then Honorable Modise, Honorable Likota, Honorable Ruos, Honorable Chavane, over to you, Honorable Mwela. Honorable Mwela, are you still there?
Yeah, Honorable Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. Chairperson, I think I want to first appreciate Honorable Chair the opportunity given to us as members of the Portfolio Committee to interact with the long overdue report, which was a bit of a problem in our previous meetings, where one of the honorable members was insisting that this report must come to the committee, this report must come to the committee, and so on. One chairperson, the report is here now, presented by the department. I think I want to reflect on two issues. The first one is that we must acknowledge the fact that on this matter, the allegations which were leveled against the acting CEO, Ms. Fossey, were investigated thoroughly, according to my view and according to my understanding now, by the Public Service Commission, which is now the report is before us. And as per the minister briefing, that this is the final report of an investigation. Now, I want to propose that, Honorable Chair, let's consider the report as presented to us as members of the committee, because our main challenge was that there are allegations leveled against the acting CEO. Now, the report before us says all those allegations which were leveled against the CEO are not true, which suggests that the matter must be closed. That's one matter, Chair. The second one is the matter, the allegations against the minister and so on, which I'm happy the manner in which Honorable Minister has outlined it very clear that he has escalated those issues to one of the other entities that deals with one of the security agencies in our country, the Hawks. So let's allow that process, but advise the Honorable Minister that as soon as the report comes to him, the report must be presented to us, because it's no longer a matter of the Honorable Minister in the Department, but it's a matter of Parliament. To be specific, it's a matter of this portfolio committee, which we need to be briefed timeously on those issues. So in future, Chairperson, I think it is going to be correct for all of us as members of this portfolio committee to treat such issues in a very dignified manner, because you will agree with me that even some of us were leveled, it was said we are corrupt, we are defending corruption, by one of the honorable members here in this portfolio committee, and that chairperson, it doesn't sit well to some of us, because I don't know corruption, never met corruption, I'm not corrupt. Now, that member who said to us, probably some of us or members of the ANC are corrupt, Honorable McGlover, so that matter must be attended to. You didn't say that, Honorable McGlover. I'm making an example. You didn't say members of the portfolio committee or members of the ANC who are in this portfolio committee are corrupt. So I'm saying, Chairperson, those allegations leveled against us as led by yourselves are serious. To say members of this committee or who are defending corruption as members of the ANC in this portfolio committee, that one must be dealt with accordingly. That's my submission, Chairperson. But summarily to say, we welcome the report presented by Dr. Aaron Tswaledi, who is the minister, and the legal team from Parliament. I suggest that we accept the report and the matter to be closed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I will note you, Honorable Tito and Molekwa, and Janji will be the last. Honorable Lizette.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And let me also just start by saying that I'm happy to see the Deputy Minister present, and I'm also happy that he is okay after the ordeal that he survived. I think, again, it brings to the forefront what a big crisis we do have in terms of violent crime in South Africa, and hopefully we will be able to step up our fight against crime, but we're happy that he's safe. I've got a slightly different view than my previous colleague, Chairperson. I want to say thank you to the Minister and the Legal Services Department for their reports. Firstly, I would like to thank the Minister for his intervention in referring all the other allegations to the Hawks, and hopefully that investigation will be handled quickly and that that report could come back to us as soon as possible. But having read the documents, firstly, I agree that the recommendations of the Public Service Commission must be implemented. But as I read it, one of the recommendations that they made was that the executive authority, being the Minister, would have to take corrective action in relation to the non-compliance with supply chain management procedures, which meant that Ms. Fossey had, in fact, as I read the report, been implicated in trying to manipulate the tender processes, because that's what I read in the report. So it says corrective action must be taken in this regard. So I do believe that, as the Legal Services indicated, that if the Public Service Commission can investigate all the other allegations that have been levelled, apart from the Hawks investigation, that that should be that should proceed. But that, of course, the recommendations say that that action should be taken with regards to the non-compliance with supply chain management procedures, and that should be done. And I also do believe that currently, with all of these allegations that have been levelled against the acting CEO, that it is my view that while these investigations by the Hawks and the Public Service Commission is ongoing, that she should be placed on a precautionary suspension, which was one of these requests that, that it's actually been made as well. Because I don't think that while, you know, there's an ongoing investigation by the Hawks, Legal Services of Parliament is suggesting that, that further investigations be done, that we take that on board and we make sure that we dispense of this matter properly by not just saying that because we've received one report that we leave it at that and we, you know, we absolve her of any wrongdoing, because I don't think that would be correct. So my view is to support the recommendations as they are in the PC, in the Public Services Commission's report, that we thank the Minister for taking the initiative of referring the additional allegations to the Hawks, but that we also ask the Public Service Commission to investigate all the other allegations that have been levelled as well, and that precautionary suspension should probably take place at this stage. Those are my views, Chairperson. Thank you.
Honourable Lekhwase.
In that, finally, this matter has been brought for discussion before the Portfolio Committee. And I would also like to agree with the previous speakers that we as Parliament or as Portfolio Committee members, we are in no authority to investigate such matters. And especially that the report came before us and the Minister has referred the issues to the Hawks, I think we are in a good position to say, let's keep it there until the report comes. But over and above everything, Chair, I am worried in a manner in which this issue has been coming before the Portfolio Committee. And it is unfortunate that Honorable Kanyile is not part of this meeting, because previously she sat in all the Portfolio Committee meetings and raised issues. It is unfortunate that she had to go outside the Portfolio Committee meeting and raise issues and allegations that she raised through an article or whatever that she wrote. I must put it before the Portfolio Committee that I personally am a member of the ANC deployed to Parliament, and the ANC gave us a mandate not to defend corruption, but to fight corruption and maladministration. So it is wrong for Honorable Kanyile to go in public and say, members of the Portfolio Committee, and especially members of the ANC, sat in a Portfolio Committee and wanted to protect an individual for doing what the ANC do not believe that individuals should be doing, especially when it comes to servicing our people. So I want to request through you, Chair, that Honorable Kanyile, is either she apologizes for the allegations or she withdraw the allegations she put, publicly to say that we are corrupt, because basically what she's saying is all of us are corrupt. So she must stop saying that. And for example, the minister has referred the issue to the Hawks. I see the minister as well as the employee of the ANC. So
point
if he...
Point of order, Chair.
Okay, point of order.
Chair, the allegations here are that Honourable Kanyile said that the committee members are corrupt. What she said is that they seemed to turn a blind eye to corruption. So she did not say that the committee members are corrupt. It's incorrect to say that. And so we cannot make such a recommendation.
Okay. Proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. In my understanding of the statement, alleging that we are turning a blind eye, it means we are comfortable with corruption. It can't be that we are sent here to come and fight corruption and be comfortable with corruption. Maybe we need to understand differently. But I'm saying Ms. Kanyile, Honorable Kanyile, must be taken to task. It can't be that she paints all of us with her allegations. For now, I think I'll end there, Chair.
Okay. Honorable McLuver.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to start off in saying I welcome your decision in investigating the matter on how is it that Ms. Fossey got onto this meeting, who invited her, and I think she should have known better as a professional person entering into a meeting where she is a point of discussion. So really, I want to welcome that of yours to investigate this. Secondly, Chair, I want to raise my concerns on the report as follows. We have received this report 11 o'clock, and it consists of 15 pages. And for me as a member of Parliament, I have to make an informed decision on this matter. I have to engage with the facts. I mean, for instance, this report indicated there is 15 energies. Not one of them is attached. I would suggest that this report must stay over, that the energies must be submitted to members of Parliament. What are the reasons for the energies not to be submitted? If you look at into this whole saga, then you will see that no consideration has been given to consequences management. I think that's the basis of this investigation. And if Section 34 of the Combat of Corrupt Activities give that leeway and power to any member of Parliament, it is his or her duty to go and to report, because I feel that why is information hiding from us as far as the energies is concerned? If that is then so confidential, I would suggest that we open the door and that this committee have a meeting in camera, discuss and interrogate the report and come up with suggestions. I cannot come up with a suggestion with a report being laid upon us 11 o'clock this morning without any of the energies and for us to make recommendations on such serious allegations that has been made. Again, allegations that has been made. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Majid.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Let me also join those who would have commended the minister for acting swiftly in making sure that these allegations are dealt with promptly. And also, regarding the allegations that Ms. Kanyile would have laid against some of the members of this committee, they were so unfortunate. And also, let me emphasize on the fact that she needs to be brought in this committee and to apologize to the members of this committee, because she made allegations that don't even have any substantial evidence to prove that members of this committee were covering corruption, because that's basically what she meant, that members, particularly those of the ANC, were covering corruption that was done by the CEO. And also to emphasize on the fact that as a committee, we don't have any obligations or duty to conduct any investigations. And let's appreciate also the report by the legal opinion, which also doesn't say much, but simply refers us to the PSC's report. Clay, am I audible, Chair?
Yes. Proceed. Proceed.
Chair?
I can hear you. Proceed. Eddie?
Yes, Chair.
What is happening now?
I'm trying to figure out, because there are two pictures of her, so I don't know whether it is a TV that side or what.
I can't hear. Eddie?
Yes, Chair.
Is Miss Modisa? Honorable Modisa? Okay, can you attend to that? We'll come back to it. Can we take Honorable Lekota now? Hello?
Chair. Hello.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Chair, I think we have been procedurally wrong. When this matter had come up, the right person to deal with this matter was the head of the department. Because the allegations were made against him. Now, we should not have been confronted with this pile of stories which have no owner now. Some people have forgotten, others have lost their cell phones and their cell phones in the water. The matter should have been given to the executive head of the department to then raise it so that the police can systematically investigate this, and then when what comes to us is a processed matter. We are not police, we are not investigators and all of that kind of thing. That's why some of the people have already made statements which have no foundation whatsoever. Now you can see that when the minister comes to report she asked from the police, nobody is available to say, I know this is what happened and that is not what happened. So it's a mixed masala. Can we leave the matter in the hands of the executive and the police? If there is somebody to be charged with regard to this matter and so on, it will be done, it will go to the NPA, the prosecuting authority will check who committed what mistake, what crime, and then those kinds of issues will go to the court. But frankly, we don't need this thing before us. If I say anything here, I may have to face the court myself. But I'm just appealing. Can we give the matter back to the minister for him and the prosecutorial authorities to investigate it, and then when there is, if there's any information that needs to come to us, they can bring it to us. If there's any that needs to go to the court, they'll take it to the court. But we can't do anything with this matter. I thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lekota. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair. And yes, welcome back, Deputy Minister. And yeah, glad to see you are well. Now, the GPW report, this report we're seeing today, was supposed to serve in the last meeting. And it wasn't even raised until Honorable Kanyile asked about it. So it doesn't really show a sense of urgency that one would expect in this regard, because although Honorable Lekota mentions that we should leave it to the Hawks and that, we have a matter that this person and the allegations against them is being considered right now to be appointed as the permanent CEO. So it is a matter of oversight. It's a matter to ensure that it is timeously investigated, and that that because these allegations could be true. They are allegations. So we need to make sure that they're investigated as fast as possible, and that in the meantime, that the right action is taken inside the department to protect the department. And so, Chair, I'm glad that we're heading in the right direction in dealing with this issue now, but I'd like to agree with Honorable Maglua. We need to consider the full report and the documents referred to by the minister at our next meeting with the PSC here to answer questions. And I'll tell you why now. So I also welcome the investigations by the Hawks. But Advocate, I'd like to ask you a question. So there's an allegation, and again, we talk about allegations, that the lead investigator of the PSC on this report previously worked for Home Affairs. And may have been a colleague of Ms. Posey, we don't know. So if this was true, and again, this is just an allegation, if it was true, would this constitute a conflict of interest? And what would be the recommended steps for the committee to take when we are considering this PSC investigation? Now, the PSC report is concerning, but it has shown a few things. Number one is that the allegations of Mr. Mgwambi have some substance. So last week we had the Public Service Association coming out, also ringing the alarm bells. It's not just one person that's asking these questions. It's not one disaffected employee that is bringing up this issue. There are a number of stakeholders that are raising the alarm bells. And secondly, it raises concerns about the capabilities of the acting CEO to serve as the accounting officer of DPW. So whatever the final report is, whether it was a mistake or deliberate or whatever it may be, it definitely raises concerns. So there were two aspects of the terms of reference. Now, number one was, did Ms. Fosse issue an unlawful instruction? And number two, did this lead to an irregular appointment? Now, the minister says that section 7.2.2 of the document says that no evidence was presented to PSC to suggest corruption. And this is just unfortunately untrue. So a submission was made that challenges the series of events that are articulated in this report, and especially what happened on the 14th and 15th of October. So if 7.2.2 of this report says that otherwise the PSC would have reacted to it and referred it to a relevant competent body for further attention, then we need to determine if this input exists, and then it must be referred to the relevant competent body for further attention. So we need the PSC here, and they need to answer these questions on the final report with all the addendums, which have very substantial information in them. So we don't have this other side of the story, and so we don't have the full picture. So we can't understand how did the PSC arrive at the determination of which story is true, because there were conflicting stories. Now, Honorable Moela's assertion that all the allocations were investigated, it's clearly not true. It just bears mentioning. So my recommendations are as follows, Chair, that we accept the recommendations to the committee that the rest of the allegations should be investigated. Now, we've heard that the Hawks will investigate all the other allegations, but we need to consider the full report at our next meeting with the PSC here to answer some of these serious concerns including the other versions of events and whether they exist or not, so that we can consider whether this should also be referred to the Hawks for investigation. And then as this will take some months, I'd like to concur with my colleague, Honorable Lazelle, that the acting CEO should be placed on precautionary suspension, subject to further investigation. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Chabane. Chairperson, welcome the Deputy Minister for since it had some challenges. Chairperson, in your opening, you indicated that Honorable Kanyile, she has been pressing for this matter to be discussed. What I want to put across is that I don't think that the narrative is correct. The report has been, the complaint has been raised by an unknown whistleblower, and the department has been tasked to deal with the investigation. So while she was raising the speedy of the report to be presented, and we have taken to our task that the report must be presented this on the 2nd, which is today. And this is what the department has been trying. The minister indicated that the report received the report yesterday. He has tried to send the report today or to the chairperson so that it's circulated, so that we find expression and discussion today's meeting. Because if that was not done, obviously, as members of the committee, we're going to be head-on with the ministry on the non-promise of this. So I wanted just to put that here, that thank the department for speedy and making sure that we receive the report. Second, Chair, is that let's welcome the report of the Public Commission on the areas that have been indicated there and what becomes their clarity in terms of the allegations that were forwarded to the committee and referred to them for investigation. We must, on the report, Chairperson, there's clear indication that the Public Commission exonerates the acting CEO from alleged corruption and activities. It's unfortunate that this report, Chair, if you look it in detail, it has been written haphazard. In the body language, they clear for non-corruption, and on the other side, they recommend they give recommendation to the systems in the government prisoners. That's what the report is saying. And I think Chair, we must affirm that position of the Public Commission on the theorem, because they indicate that they've been investigating the acting government printing CEO. They have cleared her from allegations and non-corruption that she was alleged on. Moving forward, Chair, that on the recommendation, if you check, the PC Public Commission also appreciates the good work which the executive of the government printing works have conducted themselves in terms of the review on the sum of the corrective measures, putting in place policies and systems that mitigate the wrongdoings that have been identified from the supply chain management. Therefore, the PCS reaffirmed that position, that the executive authority must continue to look on the corrective measures in terms of the wrongdoing within the system, which is implicated in the supply chain management. Now, taking cognizance with that area, I think I'm fairly agree with the veteran reporter, honorable reporter, that now that we've clarified ourselves within the process that has been aligned with the government printing work, we take the task back to the executive, the minister, to process all what's supposed to be processed in terms of the system that is aligned with the government printing works, whereas also awaiting the process that has been taken in terms of allegations that they alleged the minister to be involved with his friends, alleged friends, and the government printing works in the business. That report must be presented to the committee. Chairperson, we must be able as members of the committee to preside over the rule of law, to understand and interpret its process.
And once you get it right there, and I think what the Honourable Reporter was trying to summarise, that we are incompetent to investigate, but there are bodies that can do work and report to us, which the Public Commission has done excellently. It is clear, it is incorrect, Chair, to say Honourable Kanyile did not allege us. The incorrect assertion that she alleged that we are corrupt. We must re-emphasize that. And it's unfortunate, Chair, that a matter that comes to the Portfolio Committee, discussed by members of the Portfolio Committee, we defend the rule of law in terms of principle on the issues that need to unfold thereafter once we have received all of these issues. And if members of the committee, irrespective of the political parties they're coming from, stand firm to defend the process as a principle that must be considered for this process to unfold, those members can be alleged to be corrupt or contributing to the corruption that has been asserted. It's fairly wrong, Chair. And I don't think that we who are from that party, the ANC, we strongly don't appreciate, and we demand you, Chairperson, because tomorrow it will be Honourable Moela or Honourable Mutise who alleges, who instigates against Honourable Lizer. And it's not the conduct that we must do, because in terms of the rule, our rules in Parliament, if you have no substantive evidence to advance, why do you allow members of the party and members to be alleged? So we're strongly on that point, Chair, that will be invoked as members of the ANC to do that. It's uncalled for, and we request for your wisdom, Chairperson, to move towards that. Either she withdraw that statement or she apologize. But it's uncalled for. We're not going to do that, us as members of ANC, to allege members of other political parties in the meeting on the activity they've never conducted, they don't know about. They are also found themselves in the spirit of assisting the government. Honourable Lofase has clearly indicated that the ANC, in its resolution, clarify itself that it needs clean governance, fight against corruption. Members must work within the law and the rule of law. So that is the point that Chair was raising to you as the chair of the committee. That is unacceptable, unless you enjoy the same view that Kanyile holds on members of the ANC that are in the committee. The last point, Chairperson, is that we must now, Chair, recommend again there, Chair, that the executive authority must get into the government printing ranks. There's an issue here that there's a file that has been lost of the alleged applications. I think the minister cannot capture in well. They must enter into government printing ranks, Chair, just to deal with the entire system of the government printing ranks, allegations that are there. Now there's an issue of the files that have been lost. The committee must get that report. We must get into the senior manager who was in the supply chain, who was wrongly appointed or was legally appointed, something like that. We must get details on that area, Chairperson, because it's our responsibility to conduct oversight without fear or favor on the work that we're doing, so that when the committee pronounces itself on certain decisions, we must be able to move forward. There's no any reason that the government printing works CEO must be taken out of responsibility as we speak, because that report does not cite that action. And we must allow that process to proceed, affirm the authority of the institution to conduct the investigation and come back to the committee. Give the minister time, give the minister to conduct its work. When it comes back to the committee, respond as you allege. We must welcome the report, and what must be done is to focus on the system that are entailed in the report. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Molekwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm covered by honorable members who have already spoken before me. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chairperson. I also like to welcome back our Deputy Minister and also that We are very glad that today he's here with us, present, and all of those things. Chair, what I'd like to say is that I welcome also the report from the portfolio committee and also the work that the minister has done so far. And I think that we must welcome that the minister has taken some means to even hand over some of the other allegations to the Hawks. So for now, sir, let us wait for the report from the Hawks and then we will take it from there. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
Honorable Janji.
Thank you very much, Chair. I don't know who to waste the time of the committee. I think I want to support Honorable Members Muela, Lekwase, Modise, Lekota, and the last Chabane, and the last two speakers that have spoken. It's quite clear, Chair. And I think both Muela and Honorable Lekota have summed it up that this committee were not police or investigated, and that this matter needs to be put to rest. For Honorable Member Nizer, if I can get into that, because there is no way that we can support a preliminary suspension of the acting CEO on the basis of an allegation that are now subject of the Hawks, and there is no particular link with her in this. And all of those matters have been referred to the minister. So it really doesn't make sense. We can't venture into that. I think, if I may, Honorable Chair, the Honorable McGlue and Honorable Ward are being unfair to us as a committee, because if you have played rugby or watched rugby, I want to make that example. There's something called kick for touch. Take the ball out of play so that you are able to buy time and re-strategize. I want to put it in Afrikaans as a bias panel. The poor attempt from them to want to waste the time of this committee. Because now they are asking us to play a role of a fleeting dog. Because now we're told there's something very big in the attachment. And so what has been presented now has become very clear. Now we must go and search something. The attachment might now bring the case back. I don't think we must wait the time of this committee for that kind of process. And I really want us to really close the matter. We have got more serious business, difficult things, and a lot of work that we need to do. This process we have attended, and there's an outstanding issue that is being dealt by another government institution. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Maybe 1 minute, 1 minute, can I give to Advocate Jensen and the colleague and then Minister, then we step off. And after the item, Advocate, you and your colleague, you can excuse the committee, it's not a problem. Advocate?
Thank you. Thank you for that, Chair. Thank you for that indulgence. We will do. Chair, from my side or from us at Legal Services, Chair, let me just answer the question directly around, is there a conflict of interest? There can basically be two interests that you can have a conflict around. It can either be financial or personal. So in this instance, from what I hear Mr. Ruiz is saying, or Honorable Ruiz is saying, is that the person who did the investigation for the Public Service Commission, I assume it's a legally trained person, he was might have been a colleague of Ms. Fotsi at Home Affairs before he went to the Public Service Commission. Now, Chair, that on its own will not establish a conflict of interest. As I say, there must be a personal relationship that can make the person who did the investigation not put the interest of the Public Service Commission ahead of his personal interest. And that should be declared, and he should recuse himself. And if there's a financial interest, that can be then investigated. So it's not automatic.
that there is a conflict of interest. If the person is a legal person, there is a code of conduct that was published last year in terms of the Legal Services Act, and that person should be held accountable according to that code. Myself, my colleague, all of us are all subject to that code. Chair, that's the one thing. The second thing is just precautionary suspension. The precautionary suspension, I think what the guideline on those things for the Public Service Commission says is you can't have a precautionary suspension purely on a suspicion. There must be a reasonable apprehension that something went wrong before you go into a precautionary suspension. That's the one part, one element of a precautionary suspension. The other element is that there must be a reasonable apprehension that there will be an interference by the person if it's not suspended. So those are grounds to suspend someone. And of course, to suspend someone, that's now more the minister's responsibility. They must be given an opportunity to respond to a suspension or a possible suspension, and the reasons must be considered by the minister to say why you should or should not be suspended. One must just remember that if there is a suspension, usually it is on full pay, so you really are paying as well. So one must weigh all these things up. It shouldn't just be a knee-jerk reaction. I'm not saying do it or don't it. I just want to advise the committee what is involved with dealing with a precautionary suspension. Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if my colleague wants to come in, but that's from my side. Thank you, Chair.
Minister, 1 minute. Yeah, Chairperson, I just wanted to respond to two issues from Honorable Lizelle van der Merwe, which the advocate has already helped me. This issue of precautionary suspension is not automatic. You consider reasons why a person must be suspended. When I received the first allegations, the person who put them in was already out of work, was no longer working for Cameron Printing Works, and he said his evidence is contained in an audio on his cell. So who is going to interfere with that? Is with this cell at home, which unfortunately later on he said he fell into water. The second reason that Ms. Fosu should have been suspended on the basis of the investigation done by the Hawks. I've already read to you what the Hawks are investigating, or what you told them to investigate. The full names of ANC politicians who are said to have campaigned for her in the letter of the whistle or the so-called whistleblower, the identity of the MECs in Gauteng, the identity of the Director General, the identity of the so-called friend of mine who was an acting Director General, the allegations of corruption, the academic and professional qualifications, which is not supposed to be having, the allegations, you know, so all those are outside the acting CEO. What then do you suspend them for? The Hawks are the ones who can say, okay, in order to arrive here, please suspend. So let's leave it to them. The second issue I want to respond to is Honorable Ruos. No, Honorable Van Merwe also said because the recommendation is talking about corrective step, it means the CEO was manipulating tenders. When you manipulate tenders, you are doing corruption. And that's what the report is saying. Manipulating tenders is tantamount to doing corruption. And if the report says so, please show me the area where it's saying somebody manipulated tenders. Because in my book, that is corruption. Then the Honorable Ruos, you are saying it's untrue that they say there's no corruption. I'm sure you are questioning the Public Service Commission, not me, because I was reading from the report of the Public Service Commission. You are also saying there are a number of stakeholders, not only one, who raise concerns. No, that's not true. The people who raise concerns all come from one stakeholder, the Public Service Commission. The one who wrote the letter to you, none of us know who that is. We don't know whether he's a member of the Public Service Commission. We don't know whether he exists. We don't know whether he's a ghost or what. So you can't mention him as a stakeholder until he's identified. That's why I call the state security. So there's only one stakeholder here. It's the Public Service, not the Public Service Commission. Sorry, man. I'm confusing you. The Public Service Association, the labor union, the majority union at Government Printing Works. They are the ones who lodged this complaint
about tenders, and their member has also lodged a complaint, and all of them come from the same source. So it's one stakeholder. The one who wrote the letter to you, it's a ghost. It's a ghost. Until maybe the investigative capacity of Hawks and state security tell us exactly who that is and what the findings are. We will never know whether that person is a stakeholder or not. So that's where we are, Chairperson. I'm in your hands.
Thank you very much, members. We've got to stay.
Chairperson?
Honorable Chaban?
No, Chair, I just wanted to agree with the Honorable McClover on the that you must follow up on the investigation on the person who was invited. But secondly, in addition, that just get a view, because the understanding that these are public meetings. If a person is watching at home in the TV, how we are going to handle that? Just an addition, Chair, so that when you come back to us, the two balance understanding is there. Thank you.
Okay. No, we're stepping off this item now. Yes, Madam Ross.
Yes. Chair, we need to actually decide whether we're going to adopt the recommendations or not. There are recommendations that need to be adopted in the report.
I want to tell you how we were slipping off the chair. Or you want to say something, you want to suggest something? I'm telling you how we're going
Sorry, I thought you were stepping off the item now.
We're stepping off the item, yes. We have received the report, and the report is from the legal, they're giving us a framework. The other report is from the Public Service Commission, as we requested. Well, what is clear in the report, or before I speak of the report, what is clear is that, or what we members must do, we must not lose the sight of the real ball, because what is getting clear in the report is that with regard to the issues that we referred to Public Service Commission, is that there is no wrongdoing as it relates to Mrs. Fossey, the acting chief executive office. And in recommendation number one, they say there must be corrective issues that must be attended to by the minister. And the report, I think it does empower, not only the report, but even the legislative framework empower the minister to take certain decisions. So they were referring back, this thing was minister got it yesterday, were referring back to look into it, but more majority of the issues fall within the jurisdiction of the minister to deal with. But what was casted, if we went to the media and everywhere, was that there was corruption on the matter that was referred to. And what the report says that there's no corruption with regard to that specific matter. And the ministers look into whatever corrective measures that they said. And corrective measures, I think, has nothing to do with what we call precautionary suspension. And I thank the advocate for explaining what the precautionary suspension is and what it's about. Because precautionary suspension is, it has its framework within our labor laws. So we don't, it's a political decision. So there is no need. When the minister will deem fit, he's going to be the one, in terms of the legislation, required to do precautionary suspension. The committee cannot oversight that particular matter. So, and the advice that we're getting from Jensen is that if it falls within the framework, that is the jurisdiction of the minister to deal with. And obviously, on the issue of the conflict of interest, I don't think I can speak to it, because the advocate has clarified that when you spoke of a conflict of interest, you were thinking about personal relations, not just that because we serve in one committee with Honorable Ross, then I'm disqualified, you can do certain things. There is a strict requirement for that. I think it was properly clarified. And we want to thank you, Minister, for when you get this kind of allegations, you stand up and follow the right institution that must deal with this matter. And it is commendable that you took the other issues to the Hawks and others. To the Hawks and others to deal with these matters. The committee has now discussed the report. And we are stepping off as a committee from this issue. Whoever has a matter with this matter, they must comply with the investigation that will ensue on what the minister has already reported. But with regard to what the PSC, that we must call them, I don't think as a committee we must move to that extent. It's an extreme extent. Otherwise, if we were to call PSC, when are we going to be dealing with issues of IDs and making sure that the queues are getting reduced at the Home Affairs? If an institution of PSC and their letterheads came to this conclusion, we need to accept this within the framework of what the law provides. Which is what the law provides is that anyone who may still have any matter to say with this matter must approach the competent bodies. But I welcome the report from the PSC that absolved the acting chief executive officer of corruption on the specific issues that have been raised. And we will appreciate if the minister briefs the committee from time to time on whatever developments on this matter. But for now, there's no need to even suspend the CEO, because preliminary, from what we see on the issues that have already been raised, you can tell that where exactly the problem, where is the problem. But I think what the committee will do or must do is to, when we do oversight again, we have to go straight to the government printing works and do oversight and get clear presentation on what may be the issues that are in the government printing works. But for now, we appreciate the report and welcome the report as it is presented before us. Any other matter, we'll take it as with the committee and the further briefings that we'll get from the minister. We are going to the next item. Can you get the presentations? We're running out of time.
Okay.
Minister, over to you. Presentation.
Okay, very important issue.
Okay. Ross?
Chair, we haven't decided if we're going to accept the recommendation of the legal team. And then secondly, it's not unusual at all. When we have Auditor General reports that serve before the committee, the Auditor General comes and answers questions about it. It's not, in fact, it's unusual for us to consider a report of, let's say, the Public Service Commission and not have anybody there that can answer some basic questions. And we can't be taken because we've received half a report. So we have half the information and we are unable to ask questions. And the committee shouldn't be treated like this, Chair. We need to see the full report, and the PSC needs to answer to it.
Are you done?
Not yet, Chair. We also need to just either agree to accept the recommendations or not.
Chairperson.
Honourable Likwata.
Chair, may I please the appeal to the meeting? Even as Mr. Rhodes correctly says, we got a half a report. It's quite clear that the minister must get whatever is outstanding. If there's anything that the minister gets that the committee needs to entertain, we can then entertain that when it comes, and after we entertain it, it's then that we can conclude. We can't adopt, recommendations when we have not finished discussing this matter. We haven't got the final word from the minister. He's waiting for other sections of the report to come. But this meeting is sufficient to show us that there's a lot of work that needs to be done if you want to have any recommendation you're going to adopt out of this thing. I honestly do not think we are acting like mature people who are members of parliament. A matter has been brought before us, have discussed. Now you want to adopt recommendations. What recommendations? I think we will adopt recommendations once the minister brings a report and he says, this is a final report, and this is what it is, and then we can discuss, and then we decide we are going to adopt something. But this is just, otherwise, we are wasting our own time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I'm going to close on this matter because we have two presentations that are also very, very important. I agree. I agree with you, Honorable Likota. I've already summed up on the matter. What Honorable Ross was saying was contesting my submission. And my submission is on the basis of the majority of the views that I've heard from all of you. So if you want to contest, you can contest my submission because I've listened to all of you speaking. I'm now concluding in a particular way. So it will be out of order from you to say you when I sum up, you say there's something lacking. No. I've summarized. The summary is what I have said, that there's no need to do a precautionary suspension. And the issues around the conflict of interest were dealt with by the legal advice. Those two issues. And that the minister was stepping off this item, the minister has referred this matter to other bodies that are competent. Any other person who has a matter will refer that matter to those competent bodies. But as the portfolio committee will wait for the minister to give us an update, if there is any update. But the report, to an extent that it says there is no wrong, no corruption on the side of the acting chief executive officer, it is welcome. And to that end, I will take up the issue of Honorable Kanyile that he has said, other members, and get the legal advice on what was said, because I thought she explained that she did not say exactly the way members are saying, but I'll obtain a legal advice. If there's something that she might need to say or apologize, she will do so after a legal advice. So this matter, it remains off our plate. The minister will brief us as and when he gets information about this matter. What we're going to do, this is a submission, we're going to visit government printing works, where we'll be able to interact with all those stakeholders there, the unions and the other people that are involved there, so that we get more information about how are they running the office and what are they recommend to the minister in the near future as a recommendation ourselves. Can we go to the next item, Minister? Can we take the two quick presentations, take them as a read, because they were properly circulated. Just take us through recommendations and so on, so that members can have enough time to engage. Over to you, Minister.
Yeah, Chairperson, there are two reports here. One is about the VFS, the international company that is helping us that is helping members of the public, especially internationally in outside countries, when they apply for visas to South Africa. The report we gave you has been slightly amended after some thorough work has been done. Just to give you a short, summary, history. You'll be aware that the previous portfolio committee, before this one, has proposed that the contract of VFS be terminated forthwith. But I am made to understand that on the 5th of November 2019, this committee decided otherwise. But when the report was written, the one you are having, it was on the basis that you are terminating the relationship with VFS. But after a thorough investigation, including the trajectory where we are on COVID-19, we discovered that this will destroy the department because there is no other replacement or mechanism of this company. So we must have to extend it until such time that we go into the market, search thoroughly, because it takes more than 6 months because the termination was supposed to be in 6 months' time. If we do so, everything will collapse and there will be no visas issued, and the tourism will collapse in the country. We don't think we can afford that. It's like cutting your nose in order to spite your face. So that is the new conclusion that we have reached, which we are putting in front of the committee. The other one about the biometric control system, the automated biometric identification system, ABIS. Yes, a report will be given and a summary thereof as to exactly where we are. So I'll leave over to the acting DG, Mr. McKay, to take you not through this VFS report, because you said it's taken as read, but to take you through the conclusions and why we arrived at those conclusions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable McKay. You must have heard what the minister said. The report has been read. Take us through the conclusions.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Minister and Deputy Minister. Indeed, I will go through the reports. The first one that I will deal with, Honorable Chairperson, is the automated or the ABIS presentation. I don't know, Chair, if the presentation is moving.
The report is take it as read. Take us through excellent recommendation.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I will then move to page 19 of the report that talks to the audit findings on the ABIS procurement process. During the CETA audit of 2018-19, the Auditor General, as part of his audit process, found that this contract to develop the ABIS was awarded irregularly. This conclusion was based on the findings which had been issued by the AEG to CETA and which CETA could not resolve. Accepted the AG findings as non-compliant. And as the expenditure is reflected in the books of the Department of Home Affairs, the department is expected to disclose the expenditure as irregular expenditure given the timing of the finding. It was agreed that with the AG that the department would be given an opportunity to engage CETA with a view of resolving these findings. The Auditor General raised the following findings: that there was a limitation of scope on the accreditation process due to CETA not being able to provide the required documents to do an audit. The second was a limitation of scope on the proposal and the awarding phase, and this related to the security clearance of Ernst & Young, and the AG is of the view that the arrangement between EOH and Ernst & Young should be further investigated, as it may be viewed as possible collusive bidding. The department chairperson on slide 22 resolved with the AG to disclose this possible irregular expenditure as irregular expenditure under investigation in the 2018-19 annual financial statements. This was due to the fact that the department believed and still believes that the process followed was above board, and if CETA can provide the necessary documents, then these findings can be resolved. The department has requested CETA to provide the relevant documents in order to further investigate the matter, as alluded in the disclosure note of the Auditor General. CETA has provided the department with some documents. However, most of the key documents have not been found. CETA states as reasons for the failure to produce these documents the death of the project manager and the dismissal of the SCM official responsible for this project. Now, Chairperson, in conclusion, the department has agreed with the Auditor General to appoint an independent audit firm to investigate the matter. SABNT was appointed in March 2020, but due to the COVID-19 pandemic, they only commenced with the investigation in May 2020. And it is expected that the audit firm will conclude its investigation before the end of June 2020. Should the investigation confirm the findings, the department would have to disclose the full expenditure relating to the ABUS contract as irregular expenditure and seek condemnation. It is recommended that the Portfolio Committee note this presentation, the progress made to date, and we will come back to the Portfolio Committee to report on the outcome of the investigation done by the audit firm. Chairperson, I will now move to the presentation on VFS. I will also take it, Chairperson, that this report has been read and that it is a continuation, Chairperson, of the meeting that we had on the 5th of November with the Portfolio Committee, where we reported on VFS, the contract, and also the PPP process that we are currently underway with to appoint another service provider. I will then go, Chairperson, to slide number 24, which deals with the way forward. And this is to the recommended way forward, Chairperson, is to protect the department against operational disruptions at a time when there is substantial uncertainty and global risk that COVID-19 has imposed on international travel, investment, and migratory movement in general. Our analysis provides for continuity of operations whilst the department proceeds with the PPP alongside the progressive development and phased deployment of its modernization program, advancing presence and capability of an e-visa model. Retaining our current permitting and visa operations with global reach gives a surety of sustained presence and frontline support to our increased efforts that must be made to rebuild investment and tourism growth in South Africa. By doing so, the department will be able to proceed with its broader strategy to invest into a PPP, but simultaneously allow sufficient scope for the implementation of the e-visa program in a scaled and progressive rollout. The strategy also provides an opportunity for the department to reposition its long-term options of investments into its own capacity, development of skills within its own ranks, and expanding career opportunities for persons who meet the prerequisite requirements of an adjudicator. Retaining the current service provider reduces risk of disrupted service levels, as any envisaged winding down of VFS operations may introduce disruption and impact on existing bilateral agreements should the South African government not be in a position to adequately respond to travel, business, and investment and tourism demands. The intent is progressive and holds longer-term economic benefit and independency for the South African economy. Chairperson, on the next slide, we just look at the opportunities, Chairperson, that this extension would bring. It will give us time, Chairperson, to register the the or complete the PPP process. It will also assist us with the ease of transitioning from one service provider to another at the end of the PPP process. And also it will give us an option for the future in terms of third-party services and our operating model. On the next slide, Chairperson, we just talked to the risks associated with termination of our current contract with VFS. The termination of the VFS services on the 31st of December 2020, a six-month period remains until the termination date of the contract with VFS Global matures. This does not provide sufficient opportunity for a handover to any new service provider in the remaining time, and this is also limited by the current COVID-19 status in the country. And also the second risk is the potential disruption for services. Besides the appointment of a new service provider, a phased transition of services and whole handover must be concluded by December 2020 to ensure service continuity. And Chairperson, we do not believe that this would be able to happen during this, in this 6 months that we have left. In conclusion, Chair, a PPP is already a requirement, is already registered with the National Treasury under GTEC, and the department is in receipt of a letter dated 16th January 2020, wherein a senior project advisor has been assigned to guide the department on a feasibility study required within the PPP process. Upon its conclusion, the department will then implement the PPP, which will ensure that the appointed service provider is undertaken in compliance with applicable Treasury regulations. It is anticipated that this will be concluded within a space of 24 to 36 months as per normal PPP timelines. It should be considered that COVID-19 has introduced unprecedented and unforeseen changes on the department in 2020, and any drastic changes to its current operating or service model would impose higher risk in 2020-2021 than what may have been anticipated should there have not been a global pandemic. This applies and is equally true for a change. Within the country's economic growth strategy. Therefore, launching a new business strategy at this stage may have additional unforeseen implications that may reduce the capability of the department to render a fully enabled and efficient global visa and permitting service. Chairperson, it is recommended that the Portfolio Committee kindly note this presentation and support the recommendation for a continuation and extension of the VFS contract for the time that DHA is establishing the private-public partnership in alignment with the recommendation of the Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs at its meeting on the 5th of November 2019. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Number one, number two, Honorable Maklou, number three, Honorable Dizel, number four, Honorable Mwela, number five, Honorable Mwela, number six, Honorable Likwata, seven, Honorable Ross, eight, Honorable Janji, nine, Honorable Muliko, 10, Honorable Tito, 11, Honorable Chabani. Over to you, Lekwase. Lekwase. Okay. We're passing number two, Honorable Makumba.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can you hear me?
Honorable Makuba, I can hear you.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I want to ask a few short questions. Firstly, except that VFS is based in Dubai, what does the department have in common with VFS? Secondly, we cannot have a company run the monopoly for more than 10 years. This company has violated the Public Finance Management Act before, and I think for the department it's really a not an excuse to come and hide behind COVID-19. You know, COVID-19 is only 3 months in South Africa. And I want to know how long, what is the time frame that this will be, contract will be extended? When will it be reviewed? And I'm saying again, we cannot hide behind COVID-19. What happened in the past in terms of transferring skills? And also, you know, when you look at the scope of work, there are additional countries that actually came into play. And is this VFS also going to serve those companies per se? And I think we must get clarity as to when this contract will open again, seeing the fact that there's already four companies that has also been attendance for this. But we must stop the monopoly. And I really want to know, what does the department have in common with this VFS of Dubai?
Did they move their quarters to Dubai?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll ask a couple of brief questions. But on ABIS, I want to know who owns or holds the biometric data under this current EOA contract.
Honorable Muala.
Honorable Chair. Thank you, Chair. I don't know whether I'm audible enough.
Honorable Muala, Chairperson. Honorable Lizelle, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Honorable Zell was on the podium, Chairperson. Sorry to interrupt.
Can I continue? Chairperson, thank you very much. I'll ask a couple of just a quick few questions. I would like to know who owns or holds the biometric. Can you hear me? I would like to know who owns or holds the biometric data of ABIS under this EOA contract. And I'm asking this because one will recall that it transpired that when government...
I can hear you now.
Can you hear me now? Okay, I don't know if I have to ask this a third time, but I would like to know about the biometric data. Who owns and holds it under the current contract? And I'm asking this because we will recall that when government used CPS and Net One to pay SASSA grants, it transpired that they... Yes? Am I not audible? Can I not...
No, Chairperson, the problem is on your side. I think Honorable Zelish is audible. Yeah. You can continue, Honorable Zell, because we have a problem with your co-chair. Thank you.
Okay. So I think, let me just ask again then. Who holds and controls or is in charge or owns the biometric data under the current contract? I'm asking this or flagging this because we will recall that when government was utilizing the services of GPS and Net One.
No,
oh, my goodness.
No, no, Chair, it's not audible. The problem is... Chairperson.
Honorable, that is audible.
Eddie, come in.
The problem is on...
Hello, Chair.
Eddie, can you cut off Lizelle for now? Can you mute that?
Okay, I did mute, Chair.
Who cannot hear me, members?
No, can't hear me.
Who can't hear me? Yeah, Eddie, can you sort out the issue with the chair? Because all of us were audible. The problem is on the chairperson. Yeah.
Okay,
can
you
continue?
Okay, so I'm asking about the biometric data because, as we will recall, that with CPS and Net One, when they were utilized to pay SASSA grants, it actually transpired afterwards that they were utilizing the information of SASSA grant recipients unlawfully. And so SASSA grant recipients became, they started experiencing illegal deductions from their accounts, and it was because their information had been shared with other service providers without their consent. So in that same vein, now that EOA wants to exit their contractual obligation, are we doing enough to protect the information, the biometric data that we hold, so that we ensure that it's not subject to misuse or abuse? Because the Protection of Personal Information Act is not yet fully operational. So I want to know whether we're doing enough to protect people's biometric data. With regards to what are the reasons that were cited by EOA to them wanting to exit their contractual obligations, what is and what if the legal opinion says that they can exit their contract, what mitigating measures has the department actually put in place to deal with this? On the extension of VEFS's contract, I would agree with the Honourable Magluba that I don't think COVID-19 should be used as an excuse. I think, it should have been, mitigating measures should have been put in place a long time ago. So now to say that it's because of COVID seems a bit like a cop-out. So I would like to ask, in one of the slides, the department acknowledges that there might be possible litigation from the extension of this contract without a formal bidding process. So is the department confident of success should they face litigation in this regard? Because a negative outcome, as you already had said, will actually impact on your service delivery, but it will also result in a negative audit finding as far as I'm aware. So I would like to also ask, with regards to the four preferred identified service providers, which you speak of in terms of your PPP process, is VFS one of the preferred service providers of in that four that has been identified? And if not, how will we ensure skills transfers in this regard? I've got a few other questions, but I think I will leave it there for now. Thank you.
Honorable Likota? Honorable Likota? Eddie?
Aisha, he needs to unmute himself.
Who is that?
Mr. Likota. Eddie? I can't unmute him.
Mr. Likota, can you unmute? Okay, let's pass. Honorable Likota, Honorable Modisa.
Thank you, Chair. On the EOA, if the AG recommended investigations find that there was a collusion between the Ernst & Young and the EOA Mthombo, what then would the department do with the remainder of the ABIS contract? So the department must be able to tell us what then will happen to the remainder of the contract. On VFS, Chair, I just want to check that are the mobile visas application units also run by the VFS? And if they are they then similar to those of the Department of Home Affairs mobile units offices that the department uses? And the, how many are they there of? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Minister and DG, for the presentations. I'll start with the VFS contract. And as a committee, we raised this issue last year. And here we sit with 6 months to go. And the we're sitting here with the further extension of the VFS contract without a competitive bid. And as was mentioned before, this will result in a negative audit finding. And it's a big problem, Chair, and I think we really need to find a way to track these resolutions. Because the committee made resolutions on this at a meeting last year, and this has now sprung up that suddenly they're not going to make it. The department is not going to make it. There was an indication that they were trying, they were racing to try and make it by the deadline. And now we find out 6 months later when it's too late that something is wrong. I mean, we need to hear about this earlier, that something is wrong, and track the resolutions of this committee and whether they're being carried out. Now, in that meeting, we spoke about PPP. And it was very encouraging, because now we sit in a situation where thousands of South Africans cannot access their passports because they're locked away in TLS contact offices. So although it's an issue of UK Home Affairs, it just shows what can happen. Now, when you completely outsource, you have a situation where the Home Office is open and processing visa applications, but the service provider is closed for an unknown reason, and nobody's accountable. So this is the worry about a pure outsourced solution, and this is the worry about it. And also the factor of, we heard last week about moving to a modern technology-based security cluster, and yet we continue to outsource these security-sensitive services. So, for example, even at Lindella, I don't understand why the security service needs to be outsourced. I mean, you had foreign nationals there that were going to be deported. And they escaped. And again, where's the accountability? Because you turn to the service provider, and they just say, well, there was a labor dispute. And so that's a real concern. And certainly the PPP model looked interesting. Now, on slide 22, you say that there's three models that will guide you. Which model are you looking at in terms of those three, the Australian one and the New Zealand one and the other one? The New Zealand one looks quite interesting because they invested in their staff capacity overseas. And if you look at our situation, you've got China, India, and Nigeria, which count for half of all our applications around the world. And this is potentially 250 million rands worth of annual revenue for places which could really benefit from Home Affairs being able to take their own biometrics or have more Home Affairs staff. So, for example, the Auditor General report on foreign missions that spoke about what's happening in Mumbai and New Delhi, where Indian nationals are receiving free permits without supporting applications, and there's an inadequate number of officials, Or Nigeria, where 50% of the applications are fraudulent. You have a service provider that's at the front there. You could have Home Affairs people that were catching it before it went through and created a backlog. And then there's also the long outstanding applications for IDs and passports that go missing in the diplomatic bags. And so my question is, are you looking at ways to invest in these kind of offices as part of your PPP model? And where you could perhaps take some of the smaller missions and allow that to be completely outsourced and take a bit more control over the very big countries that are a big source of visa business for you. Then in terms of the EOH and ABIS, so there's been continuous extensions due to delays in implementing phase one, which was actually supposed to end in 2018 and still not complete. Why couldn't the DHA implement penalties as per contractual agreements? And then finally, what are the implications to Home Affairs should the legal opinion say that EOH Mthombo is within its rights to exit the contract? What are the measures being put in place if such an eventuality happens and they suddenly exit? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Tito.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is on the ABUS, And then who was the Department of Home Affairs representative tasked to oversee the department's interest at CETA during the birthing process? What was their report regarding the entire birthing process that awarded EOH Mthombo the ABUS contract? Chairperson, I'm asking this question because of last year we had a committee meeting where the Minister of Communication was there with us, and they were explaining to us that they are busy with reports, giving us reports in terms of the missing documents and all of those things. And the Deputy Chairperson of Home Affairs was also present. He told us that we actually have received some of the documents, the missing documents. But now I see that here we have appointed SABNT in the department to do more research, and they have discovered that some of the other cities, they are empty. So when will the CETA come to the portfolio committee and explain what is happening? Because of we received a report that the documents are there, but now they are giving us empty CDs. And the department now is saying that because of without those documents, they want to seek for condonation. So can we just get a clarity on that, Chairperson? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mwela.
Thank you, sir. No. Thank you, Chairperson. Welcome the presentations, both presentations. My submission will be that Chairperson, on the issue of ABUS procurement and so on, let's ask or request the department to brief us immediately after the investigation has been concluded, especially on the audit findings. Because there's an independent audit firm that has been appointed to deal with those issues. So, my view for now is that Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, and the DG will await for a full report regarding the full expenditure that relates to the ABUS contract so that we can be able to climatize ourselves on those issues. That's my submission, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Molekwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I agree that we welcome the report, and the issues raised by the Office of the Auditor General must be attended to as a matter of urgency, and we must get a progress report on that matter. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Chair? She had a problem with the connection.
Honorable Chabani.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I want also just to, on a brief issues, Chair. On the ABUS, Chair, I think the acting former Director General presented a detailed report last year on the issues surrounding the ABUS. The Auditor General had an opinion around that. And we have been laboring around this matter, Chairperson. If you look on this report that has been presented now, it appears there may be issues that were presented before, and there's an acknowledgement of movement, but too slow for accountability. So what Chairperson, I'll propose is that, and secondly, that we raise with the CETA, the Minister of the Minister of Communication, Minister Ndaveni, attended the portfolio committee meeting. And if you recollect well, CETA was unable to come to the party. In fact, we even turned away the report that was presented, and that we need a detailed report on the issues that are arising from this ABIS and in line with the UOA. So I want the Chairperson to propose that the portfolio committee may need to recall again, call that meeting, Chair, with CETA, in particular, to deal with this matter of the ABC EOH, so that we find proper clarity on the issues that are there. And once the person were unable to move within that system, we may need to refer this matter to SCOPA for proper for proper attention to the issues. Now, Chair, the questions around that is how much negative impact has contributed for non-service of this EOH to the department? And I hear that the DG says that they will give us the full irregular expenditure in terms of the value of money on the area. How much so far they've paid this institution for non-service? Because we can't, Chairperson, allow activities that the AG has also cited. The AG cited a possible collusion with other institutions. So I propose, Chair, that we need to call CETA, we call the DHA on this matter, because when they call CETA, they blame the Department of Home Affairs, it's loss of documents, they can't find financial statements. So it's important, Chair, that we invoke that that process. And I propose, Chair, that we call this meeting. Let's appreciate the continued process, internal investigation process that is conducted by DHA around this issue. But for proper coherence of information data, let's bring the two institutions together and get a clarity. The issue on the second presentation of the VFS. I think, Chair, again, the report was presented to us in the last meeting. And out of the wisdom of members of the portfolio committee, we by then resolved that this VFS must be extended and agreed that this triple P must continue. There must not be disruption at the end of the process that should be handed over. And I don't want us, Chairperson, to attempt to rebuke the previous portfolio committee meeting and this decision that the department is raising on the basis of the COVID. The COVID now they want to extend. No. We're clear on the first in the committee. The presentation we raised. It was even clear that they were suspect of allegations. This contract, there's problems. It was articulated in terms of how far they went, clear this campaign. So we may need to consider, given the fact that once there's disruption on the process, it will affect the country badly in terms of the activities that the service providers, which are assumed to be in participation. So we must agree with the proposal of the department, allow the space of transition of handover. There are many areas that I think, including the data and migration to these issues of the VFS. Any other triple P that's going to be appointed, Chair, we must allow that process for a transition. We must consider this recommendation that has been put. If you want to argue on the basis of the monopoly of the issues, that is an historical and political debate that members want to enter into. And I don't think that we may need to to advance that the institution that has been holding us into anti-transformation in the country for almost 100 years or so, Chair. So if we want to enter in that as a subject for discussion, but we don't look on the services that must assist government, services that must assist the institution, we were not able to assist it. So let's accept the discussion, because it's not in our interest, all of us, to want the department to collapse, to want the issues that we're crying on the department to go disarray. Last week, we've received the report on the reposition of the department. We must align our thinking within that context. And this part of accepting, noting these challenges that are raising in the transition, the extension of the VFS, respond to what the last presentation has to assist the department to move forward. Let's consider that the department must go and deal with the planning. We must come back, deal with planning on the transitional plan once whoever is appointed. What are the issues that they put in place measures like this one of the EOH? Once the contract says they're within their rights to exist, what are the options that the department will be implementing? So those are my submissions, Chair, around the two issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chanji. Honorable Chanji. Is not there. Honorable Lekwatse. Okay. Can we the deputy minister?
So, thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to assist with the answering on some of the questions. I think the first question is around the issue of ownership of data by Home Affairs. With the manner in which the system has been structured is such that the Department of Home Affairs becomes the owner of data and information that will be migrated in the process of the automated biometric information system, what we commonly refer to as APIS. So I think that is very important for us to note. So there shouldn't be any fear that the data will be owned by somebody else other than the department. It will continue to sit with the department. The other issue that I think members of the committee need to take notice of, in everything that we are discussing, we must never forget the predicament that the department is in when it comes to the issue of the cap that was introduced by Treasury in terms of the cost of staff. That is very important, because in some of the areas, we cannot grow capacity by growing staff because we have already reached the ceiling. And as such, that is why we had to look at other innovative ways of making sure that we continue to offer the service whilst we do not sort of go over the staffing that has been given to us by Home Affairs, that has been given to us by Treasury. And that is why we think that the system, particularly that is being adopted throughout the world, that is also being used by VFS, is a system that helps us, because it also comes at no cost to the department. Even in terms when you check average pricing with other countries, it still comes out very low. The ultimate objective is to ultimately build our own capacity as Home Affairs, and that is why we are coming up with the e-visa system, which will systematically progress. Because remember, when you are talking about visas, you are not just talking about tourist visas. You are talking about working workers visas. You are talking about quite a variety of mix of visas. And that also requires us to have capacity throughout the entire world in order for us to capture those. And I think the issue of the Triple P has been dealt with in terms of it being registered as part of the way forward. So we have a responsibility to maintain that particular balance. And that is why you will see, even when it comes to Lindela, we will have loved to have our complete capacity being capacity of Home Affairs. But at the end of the day, let us remember there is that issue of capping of staff.
And also, I think it's important for us, when we change systems, we need to change in a progressive manner rather than a rapid manner that will see us disrupting services. Thank you.
Thank you. DG? Acting DG?
Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson. I will just deal with some of the issues that DM did not deal with yet. Oh, sorry, Minister.
Go on, go on.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Maglua asked around the issue of what do we have in common with VFS. VFS is our business partner or service provider when it comes to frontline services for visa applications. And that is the relationship and what we have in common with VFS. With regard to the issue around VFS, this matter always comes up around VFS and where it's based. Chairperson, VFS, Home Affairs is contracted to VFS South Africa. VFS South Africa is a subsidiary of VFS UK. VFS UK is part of the visa facilitation worldwide, which is owned by a company called EQT, which is based in Sweden. The corporate office of VFS is based in Dubai. So that is the company that we are doing business with. It is based in Sweden as its head office, and I think as it has offices right across the world, it also has a corporate office in Dubai. Chairperson, the with regard to the issue of whether VFS is one of the bidders, yes, they are part of the accredited of the four accredited bidders in the triple P process. The portfolio committee will also note from our presentation that internationally there are basically only five companies that do this type of that offer this kind of services internationally. Chairperson, with regard to the VFS mobile services to clients, no, it is not similar to the Home Affairs mobile unit. These are suitcase services that are taken out to clients, whether they are on farms or at the mines, and it is just a way to register people onto the system offline, but it is not the same kind of services offered by our Home Affairs mobile units. Chairperson, I think I will stop there. The Deputy Minister had dealt with the other issues with regard to VFS. I am now going to ask, with your indulgence, Chairperson, if Mr. Mavuso can just respond to some of the outstanding matters with regard to EOH and the investigation, Chairperson. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm just going to deal with the issue that Honourable Zell and Honourable Ruos did ask about the legal opinion. So where we are currently is that EOH had indicated that they wish to cede the contract to one of their subcontractors, which is a technology partner called Ademia. There's been discussion between ourselves, our legal team, EOH and Ademia legal team, because EOH cannot just exit the contract because they cannot also cede the responsibilities without us as a client agreeing to that. So there has been discussions around the financials, because our belief is that whatever that has been expended, we need to get benefit out of it. What has been spent so far obviously has covered the issue of project cost and the hardware that we needed to procure. At this point in time, Honorable Rose wanted to know what would happen if they were to ditch us. We're currently running the honey system. What we have just done in the last financial year, it did technology upgrade the honey system. That is why the system has been stable for almost a year now without having any glitches. But what we want is to move towards ABS, because ABS is going to help us to introduce other, what we call, biometrics, for an example, your iris and other biometrics, so that when you are processing clients at the airport, for an example, with COVID, we're expecting that our airports must have e-gates, we're expecting that our clients must be served remotely, and so forth. So that back engine will be able to help us to be able to do that. Obviously, if there are risks relating to ABS completion, we do have an option that would look at our current existing harness in relation to tech upgrade on harness. The last point maybe that I must just raise is that on the issue relating to data, remember we have biographic information which is sitting on our National Population Register. That National Population Register is a state and government-owned software and a system. Secondly, with HANIS, you remember, used to be run by a company called MAPLES. MAPLES is no more anymore, but HANIS is still with us because those biometrics that were collected, South Africans, it belongs to the Department of, so it's state property. So nobody else can actually, we have the source code into the system. So I thought I must just allay the fears of the honorable members in relation to that. So I think those are the questions that I thought I should just quick clarify. The question which I might deal with, what Honorable Ross raised about TLS. TLS is not servicing South Africans, it's servicing the UK citizens in South Africa. So that's a different story at all. Unfortunately, the Department of Home Affairs has breached them.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Sorry, thank you. Minister, over to you now.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think most of the questions have been answered, but I just want to deal with two issues here, Chairperson. This issue that keep on arising, especially the issues flagged by Honorable McClure about VFS, relationship with the department, Dubai, etc. You see, Chairperson, when this saga started, one was not in the department. And I wanted to go deep to understand, what is this animal called VFS? And why are there always problems flagged by members of parliament? So I went through with the department through these presentations. And I couldn't get anything, and I asked, but what's going on? There are these allegations of corruption and impropriety and all that. What actually is going on? Why don't you put something on the table for me to see exactly what you are talking about? Then the answer I got was that, Minister, somebody brought the name of Gupta in this whole thing. And in South Africa, the name Gupta is a swear word. Once you are associated with the Guptas, you must be thrown away completely, regardless of the facts on the table. And it looks like that is what VFS suffered. And now I understand today, when Ms. Honorable McClure mentioned Dubai Gupta, you know, they are sort of related. And Mr. McKay has tried to explain. So, Chairperson, this issue of using visa facilitation services is an international practice. And I don't want us to sit here and pretend that South Africa is not what it is. Many countries much more advanced than us, economically, huge democracies, also use these services because they don't have any capacity to do these things that you are mentioning here on your own. As Honorable, as the acting DG has said, there are 5 companies internationally which are doing this frontline visa processing services. Is TLS Contact, which Honorable Rios has mentioned, is serving the UK, France, Netherlands, Germany, Belgium, and Hungary, and it's in the report. Then there's BSL International, serving Spain, India, China, Vietnam, Ecuador, Austria, Ghana, Kenya, Cameroon, Ireland, and it's also in the report. Then there is this VFS we're talking about. It's serving UK, USA, China, Canada, New Zealand, Germany, Italy, Austria, Ghana, Nigeria. Then this iData serving Germany, Italy, and Turkey. And there is Kabako serving France and Italy. All these countries are making use of these services because they do not have internal capacity to do what you are asking us to do. So I don't want us to sit here and pretend to you that we will be better than all these countries and have capacity. No, we don't have. Honorable Ruos, try to compare it with security services. I mean, I might know. Honorable Chairperson, please talk to Honorable Ruos. But insourcing security services cannot be anywhere nearer insourcing a service like this. Do you know the footprint that these countries have put internationally, which will take us 10 years to put on? You know, we don't have that capacity. And for me to pretend that will put all the footprint and the infrastructure that these companies are supposed to put, which other very advanced countries do not have, and out of the blue South Africa will just have, I'll be lying to you. And if you dump them now, definitely there is going to be consequences, and you'll call us here and tell us why visas are no longer being done and all that. And then we'll start giving another excuse, and you'll call it an excuse. So I want members here to be very realistic. Now, if in the new bid, VFS is excluded, I can tell you, Chairperson, it won't be excluded on any legal basis, on any financial basis, on any recommendations from the Auditor General, from ever, it will be excluded as the department has decided on the basis of perception and stigma. This company has been stigmatized by the word Gupta and Dubai, and so nobody wants it anymore. That's the only reason. Unless somebody here gives me put on the table a real tangible reason, not just rumors, because you are making us take decisions on the basis of rumors. And indeed, I found that officials in the department got rattled and say, let's get rid of VFS because everybody's scared of it because it's stigmatized. But if you were to put a gun here on their foreheads and show us exactly what they have done, up to so far, nobody has been able to tell me that. So I just want to assure you that when we do PPPs and all that, when VFS is excluded as you demanding, it's on the basis of perception and stigma, because something has been thrown at it. The name Gupta has been thrown at it, and nobody seems to be able to cancel it. But to believe that we can be able to replace them like we replace security people, I mean, that's a joke, you know. We are able to outsource, like we have just outsourced security at Government Printing Works and hired 35 security officers. But to believe that changing an international visa facilitation company is exactly the same as just changing security officers, that's a joke of the decade. And I don't want honorable members to start dreaming about such things, because that basically a dream that you'll overnight be able to have a capacity that an international company has had. And remember, we're not spending money on this. They are doing this work and the clients are paying. If we do it on our own, the clients must pay us. But as the deputy minister said, we must hire the staff. And it will be thousands and thousands of people who we must hire to do this job. When we are struggling and we came in front of this committee and told you, we need to hire immigration officers to move around the country checking people who come into the country illegally. And that would be my first prize, rather than trying to compete with international companies with such huge resources by believing like we can hire people to replace their footprint and all of a sudden do this type of work on our own. We can't, Chairperson. And I think it's high time that the committee must face that reality. The issue of EOH, where I agree with honorable members, is the statement made by Honorable Chabane that we must check how much was paid
for non-service and under what conditions was that was paid. I think that's a very fair comment. The department will follow it up. If EOH was not delivering, under what conditions were they paid, and who was facilitating that payment? Could it not have been avoided, etc., etc.? So let there be accountability on that one, and we'll look at it, Chairperson. But on the basis of believing today, as we're sitting here, that one day you will dream about us having replaced an international company and took over from it, please go back to the drawing board and think again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. And thank you very much, members. With regard to the EOH, I think we would have to have a follow-up meeting. We did have a meeting with the Minister, Honorable Serendavin Abraham. So I think we must initiate another meeting to take the matter forward. I think at this stage, we also have to follow what Honorable Chabane says. I will interact with the Chairperson of SCOPA just to check some of the things that we can do on this work. But I accept what you say, Minister, that you are going to check the issues that relate to who paid, what happened, and so on. Your own investigative only investigative way to check the issues, because we want to say the issue of your agent, follow it to the matter. Where corruption is happening, we need to expose it in a manner that is in the interest of our people. I think that is what we'll have to follow, Minister. And the next presentation, when we call you for EOH, you'll just brief us about the freeing up the matter. But on our side, I'll interact with Sita again. And but we're better off now to explain to the authorities about some of the things that they have done. With regards to VSS, I agree with the presentation of the department. I think it's quite a progressive presentation. Well, so remember the committee and their resolution that we must extend the scope of the VSS, and it is commendable that to say the Triple P is a desire to start one over on those issues that relate to the Triple P. But if this is an international campaign, in the one of the other refuse in the pre process so that in the outside we are able to give the certain to the Africans and who are, I think that I don't like, and we don't want to use fear, favor, or prejudice on this matter. We need to follow things the way they are. We can't allow to collapse the system because people are associated with certain people that I don't know. We need to use fairness and justice and consultation as the main. I think, Minister, the presentation, look at the roadmap and extend the scope of getting to the Triple P, because the Triple P must benefit the locals. Now this company says international, and we need to take it to local, but we need to have a proper roadmap. I hear the DG speaking about 24 months, 36 months. If you plan for 24 months, then open it and let's know when are you advertising in this 24 months, when are you going to be adjudicating, appointing, when is this person going to start, because they still need to have a lot of work or a training from the service provider that we still have
that triple P will still have to gain a lot from, or by the infrastructure that has been put in. So those are some of the things. So plan for them in a manner that you don't compromise department the same way you are being compromised by the EOH thing. So let's plan properly and do things in a proper way. And I hear you say these things are of no, there's no cost on the department's path. Then I think it's also quite good. We must use that as a step ladder to ensure that we get entrepreneurs of the country to be part of this kind of services. They must not only be international. I think that's what you, Minister, must fight for in the main. That this international company must be localized, but as to the extension, just extend the scope until such time that you are quite sure and you are certain that the triple P will kick in. In a progressive way and incremental way. And I think what I just said is a summary of what I was saying today in this portfolio committee meeting. And with those words, I think they are also closing words of the chairperson. Unless any other member want to say anything, I want to honor my commitment that I will end the meeting at least 10 minutes before. Any other person wants to say anything?
Honorable,
yes, Honorable Ross.
Honorable Magluwa. Yeah, I just want to say thank you, Chair. I like the Deputy Minister's blue suit. That's all I wanted to say.
No, it's actually navy blue, Chair, so that we correct that.
Okay, Honorable Chaban.
Now, I wanted to second the Honorable McClure.
Okay, thank you for your secondment. Honorable members and Honorable Minister, thank you very much for the sterling work that we have done over the past 3 hours. I really want to say to you, Minister, and when you get a chance to address officials, do tell them that the Committee on Home Affairs does not take very light the work that they do for the people of this country. Thank you very much. This meeting stands adjourned.
You forgot to thank the co-chair.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.